Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com. /awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Don't touch that dial. You're tuned in to the Dread Podcast Network.
From Nice Guy Productions World Headquarters overlooking the glamorous San Fernando Valley, I'm Mick Garrison. This is the fun size edition of Postmortem AMA, where you can ask me anything. And asking your questions on your behalf is the affable producer, Joe Russo. Joe, how are you?
Hello, Mick. I am anxiously biting my nails today. We're waiting. You and I are both waiting to hear. The WGA is on its fifth day of negotiations with the studio CEOs and the AMPTP. There's a lot of buzz that there could be a deal in the works.
It's a promising sign when they're sitting together 5 days straight.
Sure feels.
Including that. The weekend. Yeah.
Yes. So I guess the big question is, when this airs, we may have an answer, we may not, but have you finished your spec?
I was going to. And I have the idea that I have not started writing yet because I've been in anticipation, and I do have a screenwriting assignment that comes up once the strike is over. Ooh. So I keep anticipating that that's going to be any moment. And
got it. So
no
so
reason
you're,
to anticipate
you're ready
that
to
until
start
now.
A job once this is all said and done. You know, I think the weirdest part is going to be taking meetings again. I got out of the habit of building those into my schedule. So,
Anyway, I'll be Zoom.
Do you prefer Zoom meetings or do you prefer in persons?
I'd much rather be in person.
Yeah, I do too, especially for general meetings. I think you just don't forge the same connection over Zoom.
It's
a little bit
and
more.
And for anything, including doing the podcast.
That's true. Yes.
I greatly prefer having the guests here at Nice Guy Productions World Headquarters to be able to be face to face. There's no lag. There is no dip in sound when one person talks over another. And just being able to look people in the eye face to face rather than through a two-dimensional screen makes a huge difference in how deep we go.
I think so too. Do you want to do some questions?
Let's do it. We also have a surprise coming about midway through the show, so let's dive in.
Stay tuned. Yes. Abby asks, how was Spain, and I'm going to throw in, and London?
Spain and London were great. I was invited to I love Spain. I've been there several times, but this has been to an area I'd never been to before, the Costa del Sol, which is kind of the Riviera of Spain. Ooh. So very high-end yachts and huge hotels and resorts and things that I had no idea existed. But I was honored by the film festival, Fantastic Film Festival of the Costa del Sol, with what they call their unicorn award, unicornio.
You are a unicorn, Mick.
I guess I am. You can tell by the size of my nose.
Oh boy. Yeah. Wah.
But it was a great honor. And, critters are particularly popular in Spain. So the movie they showed out of the entirety of my film history was Critters 2, my first feature as a director.
That's fun.
And it was a lot of fun, and the award is absolutely stunning. And it was a great time. And then it was basically just fun in London. My wife was going to be going on a trip with her sister-in-law, but there was a health issue that came up and they had to cancel. So I had extended my trip to include a trip to London and to visit friends and the like. So it was a great time just on my own, where I got to visit with Edgar Wright and Neil Marshall and Jed Shepard and see some theater. And it was really entirely recreational. And
you saw a spooky play.
Yeah, 222, which is has closed now, but it had gotten great rave reviews, and it's a ghost story in the theater, and I couldn't not do that. The day I got into London, I checked the theater listings and saw it was playing at 6:30 that evening, and I walked to the theater and got my tickets and went in.
That seems quite fortuitous.
It was great. Great fun.
Well, good. Good. I'm glad you had a nice trip. It was fun to watch through the photos on social. So, all right. Let's get into some heftier questions. Scott writes, "Hey, Mick and Joe, if you were stranded on an island for 7 days and were only able to watch one movie, what are you watching?"
The desert island movie question rears its ugly head. That's a tough one, but it's nice that it's only 7 days, so it doesn't have to be Groundhog Day.
Yes.
Have to be Groundhog Day every day.
Right.
You know, a lot of people would choose something really lighthearted. I think one of the most rewatchable movies in history is Poltergeist. Every time it's on, I have to watch the rest of it. But I'm not going to do that one. I'm going to go dark and cynical, because a really great movie makes me feel good, even if it is dark and cynical and not something that gives you joy and laughs and pleasure.
Yeah.
I take great pleasure in a well-crafted movie, no matter how dark it goes.
Okay.
So I'm going to go for one of my favorite films. It was a total disaster when it came out in 1950, but Billy Wilder's Ace in the Hole, also known as The Big Carnival.
Oh, yeah.
It's a wonderful film starring Kirk Douglas. It's so cynical, and it's about a man trapped in a mine cave-in, and Kirk Douglas is an alcoholic reporter who used to work in New York for the big papers and now is looking for a job at a podunk paper in New Mexico. And so he hears about this story and exploits it. He knows that there is an easy way to get to the guy in the mine, but wants to turn it into a big carnival and a big nationwide event by not letting them know that. And they have to go to great pains that will take days and days and days to dig him out from the opposite direction.
Well, I think that is a good sell. Why do you think you could watch that every day for 7 days straight, though?
Well, I don't know that I would, but...
Well, no, but that's what you have to do. That's the question.
Well, he just said the only movie that I would have for 7 days.
All right.
I don't need to watch it every day, but I could, because it's just so filled with a kind of Hollywood filmmaking that was so rare in the 1950s and 40s.
Yeah. When
Hollywood was the dream factory.
Yeah. You know,
this went in a direction that only Billy Wilder could pull off. And it's a fantastic film with Jan Sterling as the female lead. But it's Kirk Douglas is at his very best, and nobody's trying to shoot for the happy ending that was the norm for everything that came out of the Dream Factory in those days.
Well, our post producer, Chris, chimed in with a message that said he would pick The Wizard of Oz. Which, you know, I get there's a lot of variety in that movie.
I get that too. But when I was growing up in the days of network television, where there wasn't the selection of streaming and on demand, or even cable choices, it was on every year.
Yeah.
And we watched it every year. And as brilliant as it is, I think I've seen it enough.
That's how I felt about when I worked at Hollywood Video. We could only play PG movies. And so when I was in college, a movie that was PG that we were all super excited about was Napoleon Dynamite. And we played that movie every single day, and it eventually drove me insane, I think.
A great movie, but I don't think I could watch it.
I saw it 4 times in the theater. I absolutely unabashedly love it, but yeah. You know, 30, 40 times at work, you kind of lose your mind a little bit. It's seared into my brain. When I wrote the question, the movie that popped into my head as I was like writing it down was Lost in Translation. I think it's such like a mood and vibe piece, and it's funny, it's sad, it's bittersweet, it's an adventure, it's
That's
quiet.
That's a great movie, yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's just like there's so many different facets to it that I think if I had to watch something 7 days in a row, I could get a lot out of watching it.
I think it's Sofia Coppola's best film, and it is so knowing and so bright, and you just feel the atmosphere of it. I actually went to that hotel bar in Japan when we were shooting Masters of Horror in Tokyo.
Oh, that's really cool.
And it, just that feeling of being jet lagged and otherworldly, kind of, it's the middle of the night and I don't know what time it is. I can't feel what time it is, but I know I'm in a haze that I'm not going to get out of, that Bill Murray does so well. But the atmosphere is laid in so beautifully by Coppola.
It really is a beautiful movie, and it turns 20 this fall, which is
amazing.
I know. All right. Trouble writes, hello, Mick and Joe. Mick, have you ever considered directing found footage horror movie? You've touched upon the style of shooting in The Stand with the news crew scene, and in my opinion, it worked. Also, can you talk a little about that scene, how it was shot, your direction of the actors, etc.? Cheers.
Yeah, no, I've never wanted to shoot a found footage movie. although there are a handful of really great ones, and One Cut of the Dead comes to mind as maybe my favorite of all of them.
Yeah.
You know, Blair Witch
which you were resistant to see at first too, because of your typical aversion to these
to not only found footage but a zombie movie.
Yeah, we had to twist your arm, but you loved it once you watched it.
It's a masterpiece. It's a masterpiece. But it's not something I want to do. I love the tools of cinema, the polished tools of cinema, the change of lenses, the use of color, the use of sound, post-production techniques. Everything that requires more than the ragged video footage of something that's immediate and handheld. Like I say, some of them are masterpieces, but those are really in the minority. I think it's hard to do the best filmmaking possible in a found footage film. And the whole point is to not use the tropes of polished filmmaking to do that. When we did it in The Stand, there's a scene he's talking about where there is a news reporter played by Wendy Phillips, who was also the mother in Fuzzbucket. And the military is attacking people, attacking the press, and trying to keep them from the truth of the spread of this disease that they nicknamed Captain Trips. And so we did it all in one unbroken take because we shot it on video because we were the film crew or the news crew that was recording this. So I wanted to give it the veracity of the real thing. And it's interesting because when it played on television, because it was shot on video, it popped out feeling very different from the 16 millimeter film that the rest of the miniseries was shot on. But the direction was, this is real. There are no cuts. There's no redos. We do it from beginning to end, and it ends with the cameraman being shot and the camera falling on its side and recording the end of it from there. So it was really just amping everything up and letting everybody know this is one take straight through, no fixes. So you know, we did several takes of it, obviously, but it was beginning to end and everybody was really on board, and it gave it a very exciting veracity.
And you never thought, man, I want to do a whole movie like that?
I never have. And I likely never will. There were a couple of times where I almost did. I wrote an episode of Nightmares and Dreamscapes that did not get made when they made the series for TNT, the series from Stephen King's stories. And it was too expensive. So they said, how about doing a found footage one instead? And I said, you know, that's not really what I'm best at. And I don't think that's something that would be a good match for you or for me. Yeah. And the same thing happened with A Tales from the Crypt. They were having budgetary issues and they asked me if I would do a found footage version. And I begged off. I just didn't think I would be the best person to do it.
You have to know what your strengths and weaknesses are too.
Yeah. You know? And interests.
And interests. Yeah, exactly. So that was very knowing of you. All right. Adam writes, hi Mick and Joe. I've seen the network TV version of Critters 2 in the past, which despite being censored, features several new scenes, all of which were also included on the Blu-ray release. My question is, when that happens, are you and your team involved in any way? Does the network come to you and ask you to re-edit and make it longer, or does the studio give the network all the unused footage and it's up to them to go through and decide?
You know, they're supposed to. It's one of the rules that the Directors Guild has in its contractual agreements with the studios and the networks. This is a revelation to me. This question is the first time I heard that there was a television version that used alternate footage and additional scenes, because the movie is like 88 minutes, I think. So most movie slots on network and cable and syndicated television are 2-hour slots. So there's lots of room for commercials. But I did not know that they padded it out. You know, the additional footage, I haven't even looked at it on the Blu-ray. I don't know what they used. But, you know, what was presented in the theater was what everybody agreed was the best version of the movie.
Yeah.
So any other version of Critters 2 certainly did not pass through my hands. So I don't know what it's like.
Interesting. That is interesting. When you have done TV edits of your movies, have you been involved in where the commercial breaks hit, or is that a choice that's made outside of your purview?
It's made outside my purview, and I have not been asked to do many TV recuts because Sleepwalkers, you couldn't recut it.
Sure. Yeah,
I don't think it ever went.
That's not really TV friendly.
Yeah, it went on pay TV and streaming and the like, but you know, that and Psycho 4 was made for Showtime, so it never really got into syndication where it would be cut. And they were R-rated movies when they came out. But I don't remember which project it was, but I do remember doing a recut for television. I don't think it's Critters 2, though, but maybe it was. I just don't remember that. It, you know, we are celebrating 35-year anniversary of Critters 2, so memory does fade over time.
Fair. That's fair enough. Well, trying to jog your memory just a little bit more and just in time for spooky season, the start of spooky season, I've got a Hocus Pocus question for you.
Okay.
Rob writes, as a huge fan of Hocus Pocus, I need to know if Mick is responsible for the term yabos and chungs. I'm 37 and still laugh like a 9-year-old every time I see the cage bully whimper the word chungs.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about this before on the show, and I'm afraid I can't take credit for yabos. which we have said before. But Chung's, I also can't take credit for. I would love to tip my hat to Neil Cuthbert, who came in and did a comedy pass on it. There were several other versions of the script, but I believe that Neil is responsible for both Yabo's and Chung's, and they make me laugh too. So I wish I could take credit for it. Although Yabo's just feels like a word that was very much of its day.
Yes.
And even though it was invented in that day back in the early 90s, it makes me laugh, but I can't take credit for it.
When I was 9 years old, Yabo's was a revelation. So thank you to you and Neil, I guess.
It may have even been invented by Neil, because it was certainly not a term I'd heard in use before I saw that first screening of Hocus Pocus.
All right. Paul writes, I'm a big fan of the Beatles and the movie A Hard Day's Night. I went to see it at my local theater a couple weeks ago, and it was great seeing it on the big screen. I've heard you mention that it's one of your favorite films. What specifically attracts you to this film, and what are the elements that make it a great film in your opinion?
Well, it is filled with so much infectious joy and enthusiasm and excitement. The pace is great, and yet it's got all the wit of a Marx Brothers movie. You know, first of all, it helps to have been a huge Beatle fan. I was in junior high school when they came out on the Ed Sullivan Show. And everybody the next day was talking about the Beatles. And so the entire 10-year length of their careers together was the peak of pop music quality and history. But they're funny. The songs are fantastic. You just hit that first chord on A Hard Day's Night and everything is exciting. Everything just goes wildly propulsive. And each of the Beatles has a very specific cinematic personality, just like the Marx Brothers did. Although, thank God there's no Zeppo. But the music, the songs are great. The movie is so funny. It's so propulsive. It's so filled with joy. And its enthusiasm is so infectious that it just brings you through that. That could easily be my desert island movie as well.
Oh, we might be changing our answer to the first question.
Well, yesterday I was interviewed for another show where they had me defend my choice for the one movie that is repeatable.
Yeah.
And so it was hard to choose between that and Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. So I made a case for A and C, but it could just as easily have been A Hard Day's Night.
There you go. Well, I like that answer. Hey, Mick, I think I hear a knocking at the digital door. We have a couple guests.
Okay.
So don't we let them into our digital AMA chat room?
We are going to talk about one of the great genre festivals based here in Los Angeles called Beyond Fest. It is directed by three gentlemen, two of whom are here with us, Evrim Ersoy and Christian Parks. Come on in, gentlemen. Welcome to the slab.
Hello. Hi, Mick. Thank you for having us.
Great to see you guys again. And I was just saying it is such a massive and fantastic festival, one of the most important, certainly in the Los Angeles area, and that it's done in conjunction with the American Cinematheque, which gives it even more credibility and accessibility to really top shelf guests. So what do we have in store this year?
Oh my God, where do we begin? I think, we've got a total, Ev, correct me if I'm wrong, but we've got 55 films.
That's correct.
In total. And then across that, we've got a series of world premieres, West Coast premieres, LA premieres, and then a series of repertory screenings. And those repertory screenings, they're based around anniversaries, restorations, and then obviously key talent who are coming out. And so that ranges, it's everything from the king of the box office, James Cameron, coming out for The Abyss, that we're doing at the Fox Theater, a huge Landmark Theatre in Westwood, all the way to Caligula, the ultimate cut restored with Malcolm McDowell in person. There is a celebration of the great Roger Corman with a sliver, just a tight sliver of some of his films, Rock and Roll High School, Grand Theft Auto, Piranha, Raven, and then Roger Corman himself. And he's going to be joined by a bunch of his collaborators from across the years. But then we've also got, you know, new films like the Cannes Palme d'Or winner, Anatomy of a Fall, the new Paul Mescal movie, actually two Paul Mescal movies, Faux and All of Us Strangers. And then we've got some really great new horror movies, films like When Evil Lurks. We've got the world premiere of It's a Wonderful Knife, which is written by Michael Kennedy from obviously Freaky Frame. Dream Scenario, which is not necessarily a horror movie. It's a satire, but what happens in it is truly horrific. And then, so those are mostly in the Arrow, which is presented by Neon. And then over in the Las Feliz 3, there's an incredible program there. Everything there is 100% free. And there is, I believe, 25 screenings there. And most of those world premieres, US premieres. Ev, do you want to list off some of those?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we got some great documentaries. You know, we got Spooktacular, which is about the first Halloween theme park in the US, and some great guests coming for that, including the founder of the park. So it's going to be a great event. And you know, Severin's got two great documentaries. One's Enter the Clones of Bruce. That's about the clones of Bruce Lee. Premiered at Tribeca. Really entertaining, really interesting story. But we also have Mancunian Man, which is about Cliff Twemlow, who is this little-known British genre filmmaker. And it's about the industry and the sort of group he built north of England. Really amazing story. We got the great shorts blocks. There's four of them every year. They get bigger, you know, lots of new and exciting filmmakers. We got a couple of great horror films. We got History of Evil, which is produced by Baba Kanvari, you know, who did Under the Shadow. We got Omen, which won at Cannes. It's one of the best newcomers awards. It's this Congolese rapper. It's his first film directing. It's Belgium's official entry for the Oscars this year. We got Femme, which won big at Berlin. It's this queer thriller, really sizzling, really sexy, really complex. We get Greg Araki coming. We got an Irish horror that I'm absolutely in love with called All You Need Is Death as the world premiere of that. So, you know, there's something for everyone. We got Vincent Must Die, another Cannes selection that was absolutely really just blew us away. And so hopefully everyone can find something that they want to see from rep to new films.
That's fantastic. And we also have joining us the third peg of this triumvirate here, Mr. Grant Moninger, joining us. So in the beginning of Beyond Fest, the Cinematheque was open at the Egyptian Theater, which had been remodeled by the Cinematheque from it being one of the great classic motion picture grand movie houses on Hollywood Boulevard. Netflix has bought and is restoring the theater to its original grandeur because the Cinematheque had to build a box inside the original theater because it was just too extensive and expensive to restore it to its original grandeur. So when is that going to reopen?
Let's see, what can I say here? I've walked through parts of the restoration and it looks amazing. It looks a lot, as you've seen online, it looks a lot like the 1920s version. They've gotten rid of the 90s black box. So Beyond Fest will, once it's open, return to the Egyptian Theater. But this fall, I can definitely say this fall, we just barely missed Beyond Fest this year, but we'll be back next year for sure.
So tell me about the roots of it. Christian, tell me where everything started with this festival. And you should, by the way, give us the dates that it's running because
Yeah. So we actually start this Tuesday, which this Tuesday won't mean anything in podcast world. Tuesday, September 26th, that's opening night. And we open with the creator.
I will be there for.
You better, Joe. So it's an incredible science fiction movie from Garth Evans. And then immediately after that, we've got a film called Kill, which is an Indian film. It got its world premiere at Midnight Madness. It is hands down the most violent Indian movie ever made. There are more kills in this than I think probably 100 years of Bollywood cinema. It is so outrageously excessive, over the top. It is a perfect, perfect Beyond Fest film.
And they are not known for extreme violence in India.
No, and that's why this is such an outlier and it fits so perfectly. And we fought really hard to get this film because we were like, this is the audience that will understand this as much as anyone in the world.
Well, how long is the festival?
So we close on Tuesday, October the 10th. So it's 2 weeks. It's two weeks of absolute chaos.
That's a beefy festival. Grant, you were there from the beginning. Where did it start? How did it start?
You know, Christian just walked in one day. He was just some random guy off the street. And he told me, whether it's true or not, that he had the band Goblin, which agreeing to play live in person, first ever appearance in the United States. So I don't know if that's true or not, but I said, if he brings Goblin to the Egyptian, then we will build out. I'll give him 12 days and we'll work and build out a fest together. We'll make it happen. Not thinking there's any chance in the world that he's going to be able to bring Goblin to the Egyptian. And then on your side of the story, Christian?
I walked into the Cinematheque. I knew Grant as a programmer. I didn't know who he was, but someone was like, oh yeah, he's that guy. So I walked in and I was like, I need to speak to Grant, please. And they pointed me in Grant's direction. And I said to him, I said, hey, I've got a film festival. I don't know if we had a name then. But I also said to Grant's point, I said, and I've got Goblin. And we're going to play. So that's how we're going to launch this film festival. The truth is, I did not have Goblin. I had spoken to a booking agent who was thinking about having them play some shows in the US. But when I spoke to the booking agent, I told him, I basically bluffed on both sides. I told him that I had the Egyptian theater, which, you know, just an incredible 600 seat epic theater in the heart of Hollywood. I told him that I had that. And
lied, basically.
Yeah. On both sides. It's called a parallel path, I believe, is the correct term. But Grant was crazy enough to step off, and the booking agent was crazy enough to step off. And I was crazy enough at that time because I had to book the band, which was incredibly expensive. And I had just enough money in my bank account. And I vividly remember, and Grant knows this story as does Ev, but I vividly remember I had to wire the money, and there was a cutoff to wire the money to get Goblin to perform. And Spencer, who was running Death Waltz Records at the time, I was like, do you think people are going to go? And he's like, I think so. And I remember hitting send on the transfer button. And a week later or 2 weeks later, we put tickets on sale and it just exploded. And it was beyond any of our wildest dreams that people were going to come out.
I went, Claudio Simonetti scored two of the episodes of Masters of Horror.
Yeah.
So I had to see my friend Claudio there. And what a magnificent show.
Yeah.
Evrim, how did you become involved?
Oh, I joined the next year, and it was super simple. I was talking to Spencer. Spencer, is a mutual friend of Christian's and mine too, and a part of the festival. And we were just talking about something. I'd been trying to get work with some festivals, and it wasn't working out. So I wasn't, feeling great. And he was like, "Well, why don't you come and help us out at Beyond Fest. And I was like, okay, I mean, you know, that sounds fun. And then I met Christian and we hit it off, and I met Grant and we hit it off, and I've never looked back, to be honest.
Well, it's, go ahead.
And Mick, we have to be thankful and very grateful that first year, because we were just using the name Beyond Fest and pretending like it always existed. But like Richard Donner coming for The Omen and Joe Dante coming out and Clive Barker, without the support of those guys from the first year, like, we wouldn't be a festival. So we're always grateful, all those people back on that first year.
Yeah,
that was 2012, right? Or 2011? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was 12. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. I got to Los Angeles in 2010, so I've been like out here almost the entire time the festival's been here, and it really has become such a tradition. It's almost like a religious experience. Like, it's amazing what you guys built. Like, I'm like literally in awe of it every fall.
Thank you.
Well, it's an integral part of the local and international horror scene. You know, yeah. It's a predictor. It is a supporter. It's an enthusiast. You know, a bringing together, a bonding of genre fans over things that are out of reach in most circumstances. And it's also been a wonderful place where I've been invited to moderate some of the discussions at Beyond Fest several times. We've done a couple of our live shows there, including David Cronenberg.
Yep.
And hope to do many more. But tell me, what makes this festival unique among the Fantasias and Sitches and all of the genre festivals that are around the world, all of which are wonderful, but they each have their own personality? What do you think is the hallmark of Beyond Fest?
I can take that one, because I feel pretty impassioned about this. And thank you for the kind words, Mick. It really does. It becomes very emotional for me when I hear people like yourself talking about, and you, Joe, talking about Beyond Fest in such a way, because it was never envisioned to be what it has become. It was the truest inspiration behind it. It comes back to the Cinematheque, and it was one of the reasons why I wanted to build this with the Cinematheque. It was when I moved to Los Angeles. I first moved to Los Angeles in 1996, and you know, Los Angeles back then was obviously very, very different. The internet was very different. Community was very different. It was a really disparate city. And one of the things with Los Angeles, which everyone, and they still feel to this day, it takes you a long time to figure this city out because it's so sprawling, and it takes you a long time to find your people. And the Cinematheque, they used to have in the summer, there was this week-long program of science fiction and fantasy. And it was just a melting pot that would go from a Miike Takashi movie in the morning to a Ray Harryhausen movie in the afternoon to a Universal Monsters movie in the night. It didn't make any sense.
Paradise.
Yeah, but that's it. But to us, and so I remember going, and I didn't know anybody, but I sat in the Egyptian, and I knew, I didn't know anyone else in this theater, but we were all there, and we were brought together by the commonality of love for these types of movies. And I felt like I was at home, and I felt like these were my people at a point in time when I felt completely displaced and I didn't have my people. And that really struck a nerve. And so the idea for the creation of Beyond Fest, I moved away from Los Angeles for a few years, and I really missed the rep scene that was in Los Angeles. But I'd also had an opportunity to travel to a lot of those festivals that you'd mentioned. And I just couldn't understand why that didn't exist here in LA. And so that's when I walked into the theater and started talking to Grant. But the goal, and this gets back to the point you were saying, like, what differentiates Beyond Fest? The goal for Beyond Fest is to bring together as many people as possible. And that's why you'll have the most, literally one of the most insane gore fests, like Adam Chaplin playing a day after Anatomy of a Fall, a Palme d'Or winner, because there are so many different groups of people in Los Angeles. And our goal is to bring them together, really just to celebrate this form of left field genre cinema in whatever form it is. And it's very much, we are in service of film fans and filmmakers, and that's it. It's not about Grant. It's not about Ev. It's not about me. It's not about anyone else that works year round on this thing. It's exclusively about giving something great to the people of LA, whether you're, as I say, a fan or whether you're a filmmaker or in between. And, you know, a large part, and it's something we've been able to do for the last, I think, like 4 or 5 years with the support of our sponsors, we've been able to program a multitude of free screenings because, you know, times are really difficult, in particular right now when you think about the way that the strike has affected people in Los Angeles. So you can go to any of those films at Los Feliz 3, and there's about 25 of them, and they're all completely free courtesy of the support that we've gotten. This year, it's Neon, the indie distributor, who's supporting us. In the past, it's been Shudder. But that's a real integral part of this, being able to give people the opportunity to see films in a theater with great presentation in the American Cinematheque theaters. That's everything. But it's really just about, it's about community, Mick. That's what it is. And giving people a home and making them feel like they've got something that is specifically built for them.
And they really built it. Because I don't know if I can say this or not, but we had no budget. There was no Excel budgets for the first 7 years. It was just a risk saying, hey, if we make these events, we think people are going to buy tickets to them. And we just had to feed off the ticket holders. We didn't have a sponsor. And, you know, this year we have Neon Past. We've had other sponsors, but not, we had no sponsorship. So it was like just counting on the fans to be rabid enough to sell out all of these screenings so that we could put it on again the next year. And we just did it and did it. So it's really the fest that the fans built.
Yeah. And all the ticket sales, everything goes to the Cinematheque. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, the Cinematheque, it's a, you know, they program one of the most incredible slates in the world year round, 24/7. It's a nonprofit, and people don't recognize that. You think that the theater's full and you think it's making a ton of money. It is not cheap running single screen theaters anywhere in the world, but in particular in Los Angeles. In other countries, they survive by, you know, government subsidies, arts endowments. The Cinematheque is fighting every single day. And so I'm really proud of the fact that for the last, this is our 11th year, everything goes into the Cinematheque. You know, Beyond Fest as an entity, it doesn't have a bank account. And if it did, it would have $0 in it. It would have minus $0.
We've got to pay for the Arrow Sleepwalkers Theater over there. So.
That's right. That's right. I need to return. We need to screen it again there.
Oh, for sure.
So I've been lucky enough to go to genre festivals all around the world. We were talking about Motel X. We were talking about Sitges and Fantasia. And they're all over the world. Evram, why do you think that there are genre festivals internationally as opposed to other genre? Like, there's no Western festivals to speak of. There are no romantic comedy festivals to speak of. Evram, why do you think the horror genre in particular is so embraced in the festival culture?
Well, I think one of the key things is what Christian's talking about, and that is that a lot of this crowd is people who feel isolated and not part of the mainstream, you know, like outcasts and misfits and people who have certain tastes and people who never quite fit, you know, like, and then you discover this language that we all love, whether it's horror or sci-fi or fantasy, and you know, through this language, we discover each other. And then suddenly you're part of a community that understands you. You know, like when I was 11, I wanted to watch Friday the 13th. And the people who did with me became my friends because that's the stuff I was interested in. Whereas most of my contemporaries were into football or other sports. And I was like, I don't want to do that. I want to go and watch horror films that scare me, you know, witless. And I can't sleep for weeks. And when you go anywhere in the world, it's a common language. You know, you land in Portugal, you go to Lisbon, and the moment you go, well, you know, wasn't The Exorcist great? You suddenly have 30 people who want to talk about it. And you go to Sitges, this tiny town on the coast of, you know, the Catalan coastline, and there's hundreds upon hundreds of people just there to watch horror films and to talk about them and to show off their tattoos or to show off the poster designs. And I think genre just travels. This summer, I was in Beirut. So the Middle East is a big passion of mine for genre cinema because it's always been neglected, you know, and the stories that come out of the Middle East are often determined by Western funds. So there's a very specific language and storytelling that is sort of pushed. Whereas genre is a beautiful option because it allows them to open up how they talk about their own history and their own events. You know, films like Ashkal and Rebel really pushing the envelope. And you go to Beirut, you know, somewhere that is very foreign when you land because it's not what you're used to. And the moment you start talking about genre, you find the same common language, the same people. So it's just something that connects us.
It's something that seems to bond the outcasts. You know,
absolutely.
We're not the ones who are first in line for the Marvel movies when they come out.
Yeah.
But we are there for the Lithuanian horror fest that nobody's ever seen before.
Yeah. And so, it's, and you see it, sorry, Mick, I was just going to say, I mean, like, you see it, you know, you see it in the box office too. You see horror performing over and over and over again. Throughout COVID, the only genre that consistently worked were horror movies. You come out of COVID, it's the same thing. They're posting crazy numbers on really small budgets. It's like the one thing that you can truly bank on, from a studio standpoint, outside of the gigantic superhero movies. And even those, like, they're fumbling. So there's a rush to make more horror movies, which, while it is, you know, cynically, it's an exploitative play, but our take on it is all ships rise. Like, the more people that are making horror, the more people that are watching horror, the more studios that are investing in it, the bigger and better this genre is going to be. Yeah, wouldn't it be amazing to have horror movies being treated with the same level of investment and respect that crazy Marvel movies get? I mean, like, what could you,
Christian.
Yeah, it would be amazing. But yeah, but the thing is money talks. And you see it. You see it with so many of the different production companies that are being set up and the different production shingles that are being set up within major studios specifically to target and to get genre fans out to the theater.
And you see it in the programs of the mainstream big festivals where genre is, you know, seeping in more and more at Cannes, at Venice, at Toronto. You know, horror isn't just one thing. There's so much variety in it. It can be used to talk about genocide or adolescent horror or, you know, growing up, or just like you said, the Lithuanian slasher. But all of it is sort of spreading, and that's really heartening to see.
So let's say the three of you are on a budget and you are going to attend one event at Beyond Fest this year. Grant, what would be the ticket you would buy with your last $10?
Boy, well, there's two. I don't know if that's cheating.
I know there's 55 movies playing.
You know, I'll pick one that I just, because I've shown this film so many times, and I'm just excited to be able to show it this way. But Rialto has the new restoration of The Wicker Man. Is one of the greatest films ever made.
I actually saw that on its test release in San Diego without realizing it was a test release.
Wow.
So I just saw there's a new Christopher Lee movie opening and I can't wait, and was there opening day, not realizing I was part of a test market.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, this time Britt Eklund will be there. So that's about as good as you can, I guess. So we've shown it many times, but it's the first time we can show the restoration and with Britt Eklund. So there's my last dollar right there.
And Christian, how about you?
I don't know how to top Grant, to be honest. I mean,
well, you have your own choice. You got
especially being English, like Wicker Man has meant so much to me throughout my entire life.
The Citizen Kane of horror films.
It really is. Yeah, it really is. I'm gonna go with. Okay, I'm gonna pick two films, Mick. I just found an extra $10. I'm going with Macon Blair's completely insane, over the top remake, revisit. I don't even know how to describe it. He has brought the Toxic Avenger back to life with Peter Dinklage as Toxie. That thing is completely outrageous. It is nuts. Wow.
And Kevin Bacon is in it. And
Kevin Bacon.
Elijah Wood.
Elijah Wood is in
it. They're both crazy in this movie. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's nuts. And then at the complete other end of the spectrum, because yes, I'm double dipping, there is a film that comes out December 22nd. I think I might have that date wrong. It's from Searchlight. It's called All of Us Strangers. It is a contemporary ghost story. Also an English film, so I'm drafting on my wicker man here. It is one of the most beautiful and heartbreaking films you will ever see. It's wrapped up against the backdrop of a ghost story. It stars Paul Mescal. Grant and I had the good fortune to see it, and we were like, as a couple of old guys, we were shook coming out of there, because it is such a special, unique movie. And to be able to screen something like that next to Toxic Avenger, that really speaks to the kind of like the spectrum of Beyond Fest. But that's how we watch movies, right? I mean, like, we all just watch tons of different things. So,
okay, yeah. Evram, you know it's coming. It's your turn now. So what? Okay.
Don't let us down, Ev.
Well, I'm going to cheat a little as well. I'm going to keep the $10, because remember, LF3 is free. So
that's right. 25 free screenings.
And what we're going to do is there's two films I absolutely, I love. One is called Ripple, and it's a graduation film from Denmark. It was almost the last thing I booked, and it's phenomenal. It's a take on the obsession with true crime and the podcasts. It's like, if someone did a Magnolia-like structured thriller about a serial killer in Denmark and the obsession around him and how this spreads like a ripple through the ages. It's phenomenal. For a first film, it's absolutely stunning. And then the other one that I would, again, you can have two popcorns because, you know, we saved the money here. The Seeding, which is Barnaby Clay's film, which played Tribeca. And it's so good. It's one I couldn't forget since seeing. And I just knew I had to have. It's about this man who basically gets trapped in a valley on the outskirts of California and encounters a feral pack of children who just live in the wild.
Ooh.
Just sinister and unsettling. It's exactly the sort of stuff I love.
Oh, that sounds great. Well, gentlemen, thank you for your passion. Thank you for Beyond Fest. Thank you for joining us here. Evram Ersoy and Christian Parks and Grant Moninger. Can't wait to see what unspools and meet all of the genre fans in the greater Los Angeles area.
Awesome. Thanks, Mick. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you guys very much.
And thanks, everybody. Thanks, everybody, for listening to an expanded AMA. And send us your questions. Joe will tell you how.
You can send them to Mick on Twitter and Instagram at Mick Garris PM, or to me at Joe Russo Tweets or at Joe Russo Graham on Twitter and Instagram, respectively, or to our email, askmickanything@gmail.com.
And Grant, how do we reach the Cinematheque?
You can go to AmericanCinematheque.com and become a member. We're member supported. So go there and then check us out at the Arrow, Las Vegas 3, and soon to be the Egyptian Theater.
Great. Thanks a lot, guys. See you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Postmortem with Mick Garris. Download new episodes every Wednesday or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. Postmortem with Mick Garris is produced by Mick Garris and Joe Russo. Our sound engineer is Christopher Leon Price. Our announcer is Jeff Gelb. Our graphic designer is John Holland. And our theme was composed and performed by Bill Burney with additional music by John Jasensky. If you're enjoying our show, please take a moment to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for listening to the Dread Podcast Network.